vices of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
We're just south of the Great Lakes capital city where Earth Day wackos abound. We're broadcasting live from FEMA Region 5 and the chilly waters of reinvented Michigan. This is Govern America. I'm Darren Weeks, your host here for the next 3 hours. Nice to have you with us as we once again document the crisis of our republic and reminding of our national, state, and individual autonomy. Today's the 23rd of April, 2016, and it's good to have you with us once again, ladies and gentlemen. It's turned off. Chilly here in southern Michigan, just in time for Earth Day, as they are now passing out condoms to people. The Center for Biological Diversity on their website has an immediate release, a press release, if you will, dated just a few days ago, just prior to Earth Day, which was yesterday. It says 25,000 endangered species condoms to be given away for Earth Day. I guess handing out condoms would mean we would limit the scourge of that human activity, which is killing off everything. You evil, evil, horrible people. By virtue of the fact that you draw breath, by virtue of the fact that you are alive, you're kicking, you're just wrecking everything. They say Earth Day may get people thinking about recycling, cutting back on driving, or getting into nature. But the Center for Biological Diversity is also asking them to think about saving the planet through safe sex, they say. The center is distributing 25,000 free endangered species condoms nationwide for Earth Day to highlight the connection between reproductive rights and the wildlife extinction crisis. You see, ladies and gentlemen, these are how these people think. The more people that are on the planet, the worse the planet's going to be. It's you're just wrecking everything. This is a specific, very particular anti-people mindset that we're dealing with here. The condoms, they say, will be given away by 300 volunteers at Earth Day events, rallies, and on college campuses in 46 states. With human population, now this is their words, not mine, with human population continuing to grow at a rate of about 227,000 people per day, driving habitat loss and competition for natural resources, ensuring that people only have children if and when they're ready is a critical part of protecting wildlife, they say. But the United States has the highest fertility rate of any industrialized nation, and nearly half of all pregnancies are unintended. Well, I think that you should probably not be having children if you can't take care of them. But it's the other side that promotes promiscuity. Case in point, handing out 25,000 condoms to college students. And condoms are a foolproof way of preventing births, aren't they? Right? Condoms never fail. But anyway, this is the kind of thing. This is how these people think, ladies and gentlemen. They're completely anti-human, anti-person. They don't. Their whole worldview is skewed away toward hating people. The center is launching a new, now they go on to say the center is launching a new video series on YouTube. Oh, that ought to be a riot. And Facebook, where staff have frank discussions about how most environmental catastrophes, including the extinction crisis, are driven by human population growth. There it is, ladies and gentlemen. Human population growth and overconsumption. Controversial and educational videos will help show viewers how they can take action to help turn the tide, including practicing safe sex and supporting reproductive rights. New videos will be posted monthly. The Center's Population and Sustainability Program uses creative media to promote a range of common sense solutions like access to federal to family planning, reproductive health, blah, 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 as well as education, opportunity, and equal rights for women and girls. Anyway, that's the press release. They put out that on April 19th. So there you go. More anti-people campaign from the very earth-friendly Center for Biological Diversity. You know, folks, man and woman, you know, mankind, in other words, we're a part of the earth. We're a part of the ecosystem. You know, and this attempts to change everything, put everything on its head. God put us here to manage all of this. And for our enjoyment, the animals were put here. For our enjoyment and for our consumption. That's what their purpose is. This is a very anti-God, anti-people, really anti-social bunch of people. Monsters. And to illustrate that point just perfectly, perfect segue into the next thing here. I came across this nice little history of Earth Day from an entity called LifesLittleMysteries.com, but it was carried on NBC News website. And surprising that it was carried on NBC News because when you hear this, and I don't know how many of you folks are familiar with it, but I was pretty blown away by the fact that this is pretty well suppressed. I've never heard this before. Apparently, one of the organizers of Earth Day, his name is Ira Einhorn. Ira Einhorn. Ira preached against Vietnam, Vietnam War and violence. He was a you know, one of those who is very active. Probably throughout the 60s, but into the 70s, where the Vietnam War, all the protests. Okay. But he was also an organizer for Earth Day. Ira Einhorn was on stage hosting the first Earth Day event at the Fairmount Park in Philadelphia on April 22nd, 1970. 7 years later, police raided his closet and found the composted body of his ex-girlfriend inside a trunk. Now, have you heard this before? Have you been aware that the first Earth Day organizer had his girlfriend's body, composted body in his closet? This is a pretty well-kept secret, in my view. A self-proclaimed environmental activist, Einhorn made a name for himself among ecological groups during the 1960s and 70s by taking on the role of a tie-dye-wearing ecological guru and Philadelphia's head hippie. With his long beard and gap-toothed smile, Einhorn, who nicknamed himself Unicorn because his German Jewish last name translates to one horn. Anyway, he advocated flower power, peace, and free love to his fellow students at the University of Pennsylvania. He also claimed to help found Earth Day. Well, he didn't help to claim. Folks, he was up there on the podium. He was the master of ceremonies. I mean, obviously he was an organizer. Anyway, they say, but his charismatic spokesman, the charismatic spokesman who helped bring awareness to environmental issues and preached against the Vietnam War and any violence, had a secret dark side. When his girlfriend of 5 years, Helen Holly Maddox, moved to New York and broke up with him, Einhorn threatened that he would throw her left behind personal belongings onto the street if she didn't come back to pick them up. Well, so on September 9th, 1977, Maddox went back to the apartment that she and Einhorn had shared in Philadelphia to collect her things and was never seen again. When Philadelphia police questioned Einhorn about her mysterious disappearance several years later, he claimed that she had gone out to the neighborhood co-op to buy some tofu and sprouts and never returned. Gee, an environmentalist. An earth-friendly person lying. I can't imagine that. Anyway, it wasn't until 18 months later that investigators searched Einhorn's apartment after one of his neighbors complained that a reddish-brown, foul-smelling liquid was leaking from the ceiling directly below Einhorn's bedroom closet. Inside the closet, police found Maddox's beaten and partially mummified body stuffed into a trunk that had also been packed with styrofoam, air fresheners, and newspapers. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this is an outrage. I mean, styrofoam? Are you kidding me? This guy is an earth firster. Styrofoam isn't earth friendly. And newspapers, does he not realize that you have to cut down trees to make newspapers? Now, I'm not trying to make light of the lady's death. Don't get me wrong. Anyway, going on, but I mean, this just shows you, ladies and gentlemen, the roots of this thing, man. After his arrest, Einhorn jumped bail and spent decades evading authorities by hiding out in Ireland, Sweden, the United Kingdom, and France. After 23 years, he was finally extradited to the United States and France and put on trial. Taking the stand in his own defense, Einhorn claimed that his ex-girlfriend had been killed by CIA agents who framed him for the crime because he knew too much about the agency's paranormal research. Okay, there you go. You know, proving once again everything we say about these people. Absolutely true. Okay, he was convicted of murdering Maddox and is currently serving a life sentence. Currently serving a life sentence. So the guy's apparently still behind bars. Although Einhorn was only the master of ceremonies at the first Earth Day event, he maintains that Earth Day was his idea and that he's responsible for launching it. Understandably, Earth Day's organizers have distanced themselves from his name, citing Gaylord Nelson, an environmental activist and former Wisconsin governor and U.S. senator who died in 2005 as Earth Day's official founder and organizer. According to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, Senator Gaylord Nelson created Earth Day in the spring of 1970 as a way to bring national awareness to the fact at the time that there were no legal or regulatory mechanisms in place to protect the environment. About 20 million participants at various Earth Day events across the United States made Earth Day a success. And in December of 1970, Congress authorized the creation of a new federal agency to tackle environmental issues, the EPA, which has failed miserably because its purpose isn't to protect the environment at all. Its purpose is to take away your property and your rights to breathe and everything else. So anyway, that's the little history there that I'm sure many people probably wouldn't be too aware of. And had I not stumbled upon it myself, I probably wouldn't be aware of it either. A little Earth Day history for you. Now, speaking of history and speaking of Earth Day, I'm not going to do the whole show on Earth Day, but you know, since it was just yesterday, I think it was worthy of going down memory lane here and reminding you folks some of the predictions, because I'm sure, you know, that yesterday there was probably, I know there was a lot of media coverage, and there's always with these things, always doom and gloom predictions. Always. So I think it's worthy of pointing out some of the past predictions and where they've went. A Daily Caller has a piece, 7 Environmental Predictions from Earth Day 1970 that were just dead wrong. Andrew Follett writes, environmentalists truly believed and predicted during the first Earth Day, you know, the one where this murdering maniac was the master of ceremonies. Yeah, that one. The first Earth Day in 1970 that the planet was doomed unless drastic actions were taken. Humanity never quite got around to that drastic action, but environmentalists still recall the first Earth Day fondly and hold many of the predictions in high regard. So this Earth Day, the Daily Caller News Foundation took a look at the predictions made by the environmentalists around the original Earth Day in 1970 to see how they've held up. Have any of these dire predictions come true? No, but that hasn't stopped the environmentalists from worrying, from predicting the end of civilization to classic worries about peak oil. Here are seven predictions that they've made. First of all, civilization will end in 15 or 30 years. Harvard biologist Dr. George Wald warned shortly before the first Earth Day in 1970 that civilization would soon end unless immediate action is taken against the problems facing mankind. Of course, 15 or 30 years, that was 1970, you do the math, and moving along. Number two, 100 to 200 million people per year will be starving to death during the next 10 years. That was, of course, our good old-fashioned psychopath himself, Dr. Paul Ehrlich. He declared that in April of 1970, that mass starvation was imminent. His dire prediction failed, of course, to materialize as the number of people living in poverty has significantly declined. And the amount of food per person has steadily increased despite what they say is population growth. And again, I have to say about population growth, how do we know, really, how do we know the population is growing, ladies and gentlemen? How do we know this? I think we have to be careful about accepting the other side's measurements. Because where do our population statistics come from? They come from the United Nations, who has a political agenda to make the world think that we have more people on the earth. How do we know that there's more people here? Maybe there are, maybe the Africans are squeezing more out. Maybe the Mexicans are squeezing more out. I don't know, but all I know is we have an aging population, you know, in a lot of parts of the world. I know there's a lot of Americans that are not having very many babies. So, is the population really growing that much? I don't know. Maybe it is. But we can't take their word for it, is my point. The world's gross domestic product per person has immeasurably grown despite increases, they say, in population. Ehrlich is largely responsible for this view, having co-published The Population Bomb with the Sierra Club in 1968. The book has made a number of claims, including that millions of Americans would starve to death in the 1970s and 80s, mass famines would sweep England, leading to the country's demise, and that ecological destruction would devastate the planet, causing the collapse of civilization. Now, my question is, why is anybody listening to this guy? Why does anybody listen to any of these people? We can see over and over again that they've been wrong about everything that they've ever said. Old prediction. Let's see. You're not going to see any other snow. No more snow except in a snow globe. That one stands out because it was very, very recent. And, you know, we barely had a spring. Because we were still having snow come in. All right, anyway, number three. I want to get through this. Population will inevitably and completely outstrip whatever small increases in food supply we make. Well, obviously that never happened either. Again, that was Paul Ehrlich, 1970. And then there was an agricultural revolution, they say, which caused the world's food supply to rapidly increase. Whenever we need more, we find ways to meet the need, folks. That's what we do. Number four, demographers agree that almost unanimously, 30 years from now, the entire world will be in famine. Now, environmentalists in 1970, they say, truly believed in a scientific consensus predicting global famine due to population growth in the developing world, especially in India. Demographers agree almost unanimously on the following grim timetable. By 1975, widespread famines will begin in India. These will spread by 1990 to include all of India, Pakistan, China, and the Near East, Africa. By the year 2000, or conceivably sooner, South and Central America will exist under famine conditions. All of that stated by Peter Gunter, a professor at North State University. He said that in a 1970 issue of The Living Wilderness. He continued with this. He says, by the year 2000, 30 years from now, the entire world will be the exception of Western Europe. But with the exception of Western Europe, North America, and Australia will be in famine. Well, India, where the famines were supposed to begin, recently became one of the world's largest exporters of agricultural products, and food supply per person in the country has drastically increased in recent years. In fact, the number of people in every country listed by Gunter has risen dramatically since 1970. So, does anybody discredit Peter Gunter? Does anybody say, hey, you shouldn't listen to this guy because he's a whack job? I don't think so, unfortunately. It seems to me like everyone just keeps paying attention to the alarmists. They're liars, ladies and gentlemen. If this spells out anything to you, it should spell out to you the fact that these people are a bunch of lying scumbags. They're liars. You know, and this article says they really believe this. I don't think they really believed anything. I think they really believe they want to shove their agenda down your throat. That's what they really believe. Number five, in a decade, urban dwellers will have to wear gas masks. Gas mask, listeners, to survive air pollution. Life magazine stated that in January 1970 that scientists had solid experimental and theoretical evidence to believe that in a decade, urban dwellers will have to wear gas masks to survive air pollution. By 1985, air pollution will have reduced the amount of sunlight reaching Earth by one half. Gee, does that sound a little familiar? Keep in mind, the original, back in, I guess it was around 1970s, they were pushing the global cooling idea back then. And so this goes right in line with, oh, air pollution, oh, it's blocking sunlight, oh, global cooling. And we see how that one worked out, didn't we? Despite the prediction, air quality has been improving worldwide, according to the World Health Organization. Oh, even the World Health Organization saying that? Air pollution has also sharply declined in industrialized countries. Carbon dioxide, the gas environmentalists are blathering about, is odorless, invisible, and harmless to humans in normal amounts. Anyway, number six, childbearing. This is another one. This is David Brower, the first executive of the Sierra Club. He said, childbearing will be a punishable crime against society unless the parents hold a government license. He went on to say, all potential parents should be required to use contraceptive chemicals. The government is issuing antidotes to citizens chosen for childbearing. So he totally wants everybody to have to hold a government license and to be chosen for childbearing. That's David Brower, first executive of the Sierra Club, listeners. That should tell you exactly what, every time they talk about, oh, the earth is overpopulated, oh, it's just people everywhere, ah, oh, they're destroying everything. I started off this show today talking about how the Center for Biological Diversity is handing out 35,000 condoms for Earth Day. Why do you think they're doing this? They hate people. These monsters hate you. And that's the bottom line. Brower believed that most environmental problems were ultimately attributable to new technology that allowed humans to pass natural limits on population size. Natural limits. Ha! In other words, ordinarily, nature would deal with you. Nature would kill you. Nature would limit you. Ordinarily, you'd get eaten by a bear, and that's called social justice. That's called earth justice. But no, no, no. Since you got these fancy houses and all this, you're immune to it now. You got your guns where you can shoot things. You see the mentality here? Now it enables you to pass natural limits on population size. He famously stated before his death in 2000 that all technology should be assumed guilty until proven innocent, and repeatedly advocated for mandatory birth control. Moving along here. Oh yeah, I think he praised China's one child policy. Number seven, by the year 2000, there won't be any more crude oil. Ecologist Kenneth Watt on Earth Day 1970 predicted that the world will run out of oil. I was saying, you'll drive to the pump and say, fill her up, buddy, and they'll say, I'm sorry, there isn't any. And of course, we've seen that's a load of hooey too. Gas prices have come down. There's a huge glut. There's been a huge glut. Here we go, ladies and gentlemen. Nothing these people say is anything that you can believe. Now, we're just about up to the break already. I'll tell you what, when we come back from the break, we're going to wrap up this Earth Day stuff. I got a couple of items here, and then we'll move along. Got a lot of Agenda 21 stuff today. I'm just loaded for bears, so we're going to have to move quickly. Oh, it looks like we got a caller on the line, too. We'll take them right after the call, so just hang tight for just a moment there, caller. We'll be back in a moment. Folks, this is Govern America. We are on the air here, 23 April 2016, and we'll be back here in just a moment.
So much for the roses and the clover. I'm using food stamps to feed a rover.
All right, we're back. This is Govern America. GovernAmerica.com is the website, www.governamerica.com. By the way, speaking of the website, I just wanted to say we now have the ability. This past week, I've threw the switch, so to speak. We're offering the entire website now over an encrypted connection. So the entire website now is being served over, I don't know what bit. I think the bit varies depending upon what your browser is capable of, to a certain extent anyway. But anyway, it's being served over there. And that's one thing I've been wanting to do, needing to do for a long time, since we have people with accounts. Prior to today, or prior to this week, I should say, if you tried to log into the website, you could go in and, unfortunately, your username and password were being sent in the clear. And this was an issue that I have been aware of, for obvious reasons, haven't talked about, but that would be subject to a man-in-the-middle attack, potentially, if somebody jumps between you, your browser, and the server. They could potentially have used a packet sniffer and intercepted the data. Well, they can't do that anymore. That's all been fixed now, so everything is encrypted. We still got a few bugs to work out of the system there, and so we're going to be working on that, trying to solve a couple of problems that remain regarding this. When you go to an HTTPS connection, when you go to that protocol, you can't serve anything HTTP over that, over on a page that has an HTTPS connection. Otherwise, you have problems, and some of the browsers will block certain things, even though they're not necessarily insecure. The browser interprets it to be insecure. So, anyway, that's something I got to figure out, and Anyway, caller on the line. Let's go ahead and take the call. And by the way, folks, you can call in. The number is 1-844-646-8376. That's toll free. 1-844-646-8376. Or you can remember it by going 1-844-6-GOVERN. First caller on the line. Let's go ahead and bring them up. Hello, caller. Who do we have?
Yeah, this is Ken from West Virginia.
Hi there.
And when you mentioned Ira Einhorn, that really brought back memories, because I followed that case with a sort of particular interest for he was well connected into the international Jewish crime system. He was he was defended by Arlen Specter, who got him out on bail. And then he was able to flee. He claimed that the CIA was all a CIA plot, and so he was able to get money out of a lady who a Bronfman heir up in Canada, and she sort of funded him. And my keen interest was he went from he took that money and went to Ireland and lived in Ireland. And where there apparently wasn't any extradition treaty. And my keen interest is that I actually have a Irish ancestry, and a very Irish name. So I had gone over there and with some inherited money, and just to enjoy myself. And I had all kinds of perverted, and I'm going to say this, a lot of these Irish cops are perverts, following me around and harassing me, and I had done, Al Capone had only, didn't have a rap sheet as long as I had, as far as these people were concerned, just because. And so I left, and when I followed his account, and I saw on the television, there was a documentary, it was an ABC or CBS, probably an hour-long program about him back when he was arrested. And he had, and they interviewed a Gardaí, a member of the Irish police, a Garda Síochána, and he said, we couldn't do anything about him. We had this report about him, but there's no extradition, and all we could do was go around and sort of knock on his door and say, we're aware of this, and we'd kind of like you to move on. And that puts you in perspective. I mean, he was just like treated like with very, very kid gloves, and here I was, just a
being harassed,
an American living over there, and they just couldn't. They were just determined to just make my life miserable. And then he went from there, and he had a Swedish girlfriend at some point, and finally they did catch him. But yeah, he was a very well connected operator, and he killed that girl, and without any qualms about it. So that. It really brought back memories for me. Thank you for stirring that up.
Yeah, no problem. Well, I wasn't even aware of it. And, I was born in 1970. So I was probably too young, back then, to be aware, of what was going on back then. But when I find it interesting how well of a kept secret. Because I've been at this Patriot stuff and looking at this environmental stuff, a long time, decades. Well, at least over a decade anyway. And I hadn't heard of this. I hadn't stumbled upon this. So I'm wondering how widely known it is.
Yeah, it was. I'm a little bit old. I remember Earth Day, but I didn't participate in it. But I was around at that time, And, I don't remember anything about him. And it was, and like I say, it made back probably 20 years ago, or maybe a little bit longer now, it made the news. They found this guy, and they went in about who he was. And, he was an international, on the, Interpol wanted list and everything, but he was just treated with kick. And what the impetus was, who got the cojones to actually go arrest him, whatever it was. It was big news, and they, Barbara Walters, Diane Sawyer or somebody, maybe they, you know, they had a 20 or 30 minute piece on one of these little news magazines, and you know, that's where I get all the details. And then it, they brought him back and put him in jail. I guess he's in jail still.
Yeah.
And that was just forgotten about. But yeah, he was this big international fugitive, and they just managed to catch him. He was living somewhere with a Swedish girl. He, you know, had a false identity, but he was very well protected. He, you know, he had, like I said, Bronfen money originally, and I guess he was sustained through, you know, all along. He conned Bronfen girl. Supposedly, the CIA was after him, and then, you know, he got over to Europe and he conned people over there. He conned this Swedish girl. Well, it's all lies. You know how they, you know, he was a con man.
Yeah. Yeah.
And,
That's the way these environmentalists are. They're definitely con men.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, as far as the CIA being after him, you know, I can't help but believe that, you know, he might very well have been involved with the CIA. You know, he might have been one of their shills. You know, he could have very well been an MK Ultra, you know, one of their victims. I don't know. It's impossible, really, to know. But, well, we know they eat their own.
Victim. I'd say probably a fellow collaborator, maybe. You know?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Anyway.
Yeah. All right, well, thanks for stirring that up. Yeah, he was over there, and the guards wouldn't touch him, but they had all kinds of manpower harassing this poor, dumb American just enjoying himself in here. He was obviously in some of the posh house, you know, with the well-connected people, and they just come up and rap. And I was just out in the pub having some fun, and they just couldn't bully me, you know, and what are you doing here, Yank, and blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, that tells you something there about
the, yes, sir.
That tells you something about the Irish police, too. So.
Exactly.
So, all right, well thanks
listen,
a lot.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it, Ken. God bless.
Okay.
All right, bye-bye. Folks, you're welcome to call in if you want, 844-646-8376. That was Ken in Virginia, 1-844-646-8376. Yeah, maybe it's more widely known than I realized, the history of that. And it could very well be that I'm being the victim of being too young at the time to know about it because it was being reported widely in the media. But man, I'll tell you, you don't hear much of a peep about it today, do you? It's almost like, as he said, they're protected. They're protected, very protected. Anyway, moving along here, there was a op-ed piece that appeared in USA Today. I'll tell you what, I want to go here first. CNN, you know, just to give you an idea, we were talking earlier about the propaganda. We were talking earlier about how the alarmists, the global warming alarmists, are pushing these ideas all the time and trying to scare the wits out of everybody. Just to give you an idea, you know, perfect example of this, again in the media, here's CNN this past week.
Today is Earth Day, celebrated by over 1 billion people in 192 countries, highlighting Earth's fragile environment and hopefully spurring some action to help protect it along the way. But this particular day is going to be unique because leaders from all over the world are gathering in New York City at the United Nations to help put pen to paper for the Paris Agreement, which, if you recall, was a established in December of 2015. This aims to keep global warming below 2 degrees and even striving to curb that to 1.5 degrees. But this will be no easy feat considering that we have had
Considering that we can't control the weather.
Setting temperature.
Well, at least to the extent that we can't control the temperature.
So far in 2016 with spikes across the globe from North America to Africa and parts of Europe. And just highlighting the urgency of how important this Paris Agreement is, take a look at this. Our warmest years ever on record, 2010, 2014, and 2015, pale in comparison to what's happening this year.
Look okay, now let me jump in here real quick. He said, oh, the warmest years on record. Folks, we've covered this before. Listen, wherever they have these measuring stations, they're always in the hottest places. They're in very hot places like cities. They don't ever take measurements. They don't use satellite temperatures, which are historically a lot more accurate than Earth's surface temperature measurements are. So, I mean, these are all skewed. So when they say, hottest year on record, where are you doing your measurements at? That's the very first question you have to ask.
2016, we're over 1.2 degrees Celsius above average. Now, there are many things we can attribute to our warming temperatures, including the recent strong El Nino event that we're starting to phase out of. And look how this is impacting temperatures across the globe.
Okay, so it's El Nino that's causing the warming, not human activity.
We have recorded our hottest March on record in Australia, Asia, and Africa, number three warmest March, and North America continues to sizzle. Warmest March on record. This is impacting sea ice extent in the Arctic. It's at its lowest maximum extent in the wintertime. And this has major ramifications for the world's environment, especially when you combine that with glacial melt. This is actually a artist's rendition of the coastal city of Shanghai.
An artist's rendition. Okay, so he's using an artist's rendition. This is supposedly a meteorologist, I guess. At least he looks like a weatherman. He's standing in front of maps like a weatherman would be. Okay, but now he's got to follow. This is the science he's using, see here, ladies and gentlemen. So you don't challenge the science, right? It's an artist's rendition of what the cities would look like in the event of glacial melt, you know, a mass, you know, global sea rise.
And how a 2-degree warming world could flood even the financial district.
Yes, it could happen. Of course, it never does. None of their predictions, as we already established, ever come true. But it could, you know, it could. This is nothing short, ladies and gentlemen, of propaganda. But one thing he mentioned in there that I think that I think is worthy of pointing out is the fact that the Obama administration and many other parts of the other world leaders have took advantage or used this Earth Day observation, shall we say, to sign the Paris Climate Treaty or Agreement in New York City at the United Nations headquarters. And now, of course, signing it doesn't really have a whole lot of impact because if it's a treaty, it's got to be ratified by the Senate in order to really be binding. But as we've covered before on the show about this agreement, they're intending to do it through the back door. Cities can voluntarily adhere to it, so they can do certain things to adhere to it. There are organizations involved that can adhere to it. We've talked about this previously, you know, on past broadcasts. But anyway, they, you know, Obama was actually, it was Kerry, and Kerry brought his granddaughter into the climate thing as he signed it.
If deals like this one are not successful, young people like these and their children will suffer the most.
Okay, now this is DW, the German news service.
16-year-old Gertrude Clement from Tanzania reminded world leaders of their responsibility towards future generations.
You might think that we are too young to know about the risk and the reality of climate change, but we see in our daily lives. As young people, the future is ours, but this is not the future we want for ourselves.
Young person, you have no future.
From Chad.
Representing civil society, Shendo Umaro Ibrahim told delegates how her community is being threatened by the drying up of Lake Chad, one of Africa's largest bodies of water.
30 years ago, my mother used to walk 10 kilometers a day to collect water and food. Today, the young mothers are about to become climate refugees.
Climate refugees, ladies and gentlemen.
They cannot walk to Lake Chad because it's vanishing.
Actor and climate change activist Leonardo DiCaprio urged delegates to uphold their commitments.
No more allowing the fossil fuel companies to manipulate and dictate the science and policies that affect our future. This is the body.
How about no more Leonardo DiCaprio movies, huh? Boycott this scumbag.
All of you sitting in this very hall, the world is now watching. You will either be lauded by future generations or vilified by them.
Yeah, well, that last statement is perfectly true, actually. You will either be lauded by future generations or vilified by them. But you scumbags at the UN need to be vilified. Here's the thing, folks. You know, I'm reminded by, the Red Stars over Hollywood. If you ever have a chance, go to YouTube and put that in and watch the Red Stars over Hollywood by Myron C. Fagan, F-A-G-A-N, I believe. Go in there and watch that. And then think about Leonardo DiCaprio.
The agreement will come into force once countries representing 55% of global emissions have signed and ratified it. With China and the US on board, that sounds optimistic. But it remains to be seen whether the signatory nations will heed DiCaprio's call and stick to their commitments.
Now, the USA Today, as I started to say a moment ago, is put out a thing called Get Politics Out of Climate Debate, an opposing view. They said science has taken a back seat at the United Nations. John Coleman writes, on this Earth Day 2016, there's a great deal of frenzy about how our Earth is going to become uninhabitable as the civilized activities of man allegedly trigger unstoppable global warming and climate change. With the Obama administration set to commit the U.S. to the Paris Climate Agreement by signing our nation onto the document, it is obvious that science has taken a back seat at the United Nations. Well, that's nothing new. The environmentalists, bureaucrats, and politicians who make up the UN's climate panel recruit scientists to research the climate issue, and they place only those who will produce the desired results. Money, politics, and ideology have replaced science. UN Climate Chief Cristiana Figueres, I know I butchered her name, Figueres, has called for a centralized transformation that is going to make the life of everyone on the planet very different. Now, how many other things have they said, listeners, that sound very close to that? When they say that they're going to make the life of everyone on the planet very different, baby, you better pay attention to them. Because that is exactly what they're talking about. They're saying exactly, now they're telling the truth. That's exactly, I mean, they are telling it straight when they tell you that. To combat the alleged global warming threat. How many Americans are looking forward to the UN transforming their lives? Another UN official has admitted that the UN seeks to redistribute de facto the world's wealth by climate policy. It's called Changing Consumption Patterns. I believe Chapter 3 of Agenda 21. Actually, that's Combating Poverty. Chapter 4 of Agenda 21 is Changing Consumption Patterns. Anyway, they say the former head of the UN climate panel also recently declared that global warming is my religion. When all the scarce talk is pushed aside, it is the science that should be the basis for the debate. And the hard, cold truth is that the basic theory has failed. Many noticeable scientists reject man-made global warming fears. Now, I just want to say here, ladies and gentlemen, just in the way of letting you know, this John Coleman who writes in USA Today isn't just some columnist for USA Today. No, he is the founder of the Weather Channel. Okay? This is who is writing this. He says, when all the scarce talk is pushed aside, it is the science that should be the basis for the debate. And the hard, cold truth is that the basic theory of global warming, anthropogenic greenhouse warming, all the stuff they're always pushing on you, has failed. Many notable scientists reject man-made global warming fears. And several of them, including a Nobel Prize winner, are in the new Climate Hustle movie. The film is an informative and even humorous new feature-length movie that is the ultimate answer to Al Gore's An Inconvenient Truth. It will be shown one day only in theaters nationwide on May 2nd. As a skeptic, he says, of man-made global warming, I love our environment as much as anyone. I share the deepest commitment to protecting our planet for our children and grandchildren. However, I desperately, desperately want to get politics out of the climate debate. The Paris Climate Agreement is all about empowering the UN and has nothing to do with the climate. So thank you, John Coleman, for your courage in coming forward and continuing to even beat down the nonsense that's being pumped out of, unfortunately, the channel that you founded. Because even though he founded the Weather Channel, they've basically disavowed him now. He's no longer in charge of it, and they're pushing the propaganda. Anyway, we got another caller on the line, and you're welcome to call in, folks. 1-844-646-8376. Toll free, 1-844-646-8376. Hello, caller. Who do we have?
This is Harvey in Florida.
Hey, Harvey. How you doing? You're down.
All right, Darren. Boy, you're
down there in hurricane territory. Have you had very many hurricanes? You know, because we were told by these same pseudo-scientists here that that we were going to be wiped out with hurricanes, man. Shouldn't you be underwater by now?
We haven't had a hurricane in 10 years, although they were proliferating for a couple of years before that. We haven't seen a stiff wind in 10 years, so I don't know what they're talking about. But, you know, your show is so funny today. This is some of the greatest comedy I've heard in a long time. I don't know if you mean it to be hysterical, really. You know, think about all the people they established the UN and in the late 1940s, right?
Mm-hmm.
So think of how many of these global, globe-trotting thousands and tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of employees that have to fly from all over the world into UN headquarters, which was donated by the Rockefeller Foundation there in New York City. Imagine how much fuel they wasted.
Oh, yeah. Good point. Yeah, well, that's the way it always is. You know, in some of the conferences in the past that I've noted, I used to go down all the time regularly, and I got to get back to it. It's very dry reading, and it takes a lot of time to find a gem. But you do go through, and you... If it's like hunting diamonds in a rough or something. But you can go through the IISD.ca documents when they have their worldwide negotiating meetings, and you can actually read the minutes of their meetings to decide what, you know, to figure out or decipher what these characters are negotiating away. All these world leaders get together. They send their delegates to these various meetings around the world. They all fly in. And, you know, once in a while, they'll mention in there something like, you know, well, so-and-so decided to appear via Skype or something to cut down on emissions, you know, and it's like heralded as some great thing that, you know, look at that, they're leading by example, you know, but it's extremely rare that this happens, and most of the time it's just a high-priced vacation.
Well, can you imagine all the hot air that's being blown out of the mouths of these world leaders and their assistants and their fledgling and just flying around the world? Can you imagine the pollution that they have caused in the last 75 years with the UN completely? It's unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
And the real climate problems, which is their nuclear waste, they will not mention. They will not mention. Nuclear peace, nuclear war, they're preparing for nuclear war. Tens of thousands of missiles all aimed. They manufacture this stuff. Companies are getting filthy rich on it, and there's absolutely nowhere to go with the nuclear waste. Hundreds and hundreds of nuclear power plants spewing, pouring, melting, and they won't say a word about it. They say it's very environmentally safe nuclear. You know, it's very environmentally friendly. It's nuclear power. You have to get rid of the coal. These people are... This is a mass insanity. This is a mass psychosis.
Well, funny that you mentioned this.
Thank you for your wonderful program. And let me please ask for people to donate to you so we can keep you on the air as soon as possible. To those donate buttons on your website, and please donate to Darren. This show is so wonderful. And today, you're absolutely hysterical. And that story about Einhorn, that was a classic. That was beautiful.
I appreciate that, Harvey. Thank you very much. I got to take a break. You have anything else?
No, that's it for today. Right, well, thank you so much, Darren.
Yeah,
really appreciate it,
thank
brother.
You. Thank you, Harvey. God bless you. All right, folks, we're going to be back in a moment. Top of the hour break. This is Govern America. Please stay with us.
Govern America.
All right, we're back. This is Govern America. I'm Darren Weeks. As we continue on here on this 23rd of April, 2016, greetings to all the folks on American Voice Radio Network. Glad to have you along, those listening on the streams and on the satellite. And greetings to all the folks over at UCY.TV who are just joining us. Glad to have you along as well. All the micro stations and the micro station owners, operators, thank you. Thank you very much for doing what you do, having the courage and the fortitude to stick it out as more and more people are learning thanks to your efforts. So we really appreciate you reaching people on the ground every single day, doing the work and, you know, pushing the truth, which is really what our agenda is. It's the truth, ladies and gentlemen. Phone number, if you'd like to call out, call in, if I can talk, 1-844-646-8376. Still trying to wait for the coffee to kick in. 1-844-646-8376, or toll, also toll-free. You can remember it by 1-844-6-GOVERN, 1-844-6-GOVERN. By the way, greetings to all the folks in the chat room as well. I'm being asked to promote the chat, which I probably don't do enough. And by the way, if you access the website, on the chat room page, you might have to go and unblock the HTTP stuff. As I was saying earlier, we encrypted the website. The entire website now is being served over an encrypted connection. The problem is anything that's not going over the HTTPS protocol is going to be blocked more than likely by your browser. Well, unfortunately, that includes the chat room. So you either have to unblock it, which is really easy. You just click the green lock next to the domain name at the top in the address bar and hit more information or something like that. Anyway, there's a button there that you can unblock non-HTTPS stuff, or just simply go to chat.governamerica.com. That subdomain is not being served over an HTTPS connection. So chat.governamerica.com. If you go in there, you'll be able to access things. You should be able to access it the way you always have. All right, I think that's it for the housekeeping stuff. As we move along here, I mentioned earlier that, one thing that Harvey brought up that I wanted to come back to, he's talking about the environmental threats of nuclear radiation. Now, we know about the Fukushima stuff. We know that there's been a number of different earthquakes around the area in Japan, not necessarily at Fukushima Prefecture, but other places in Japan. We know there was an earthquake down in Ecuador. And but now we're seeing other incidents of, potential nuclear catastrophe. One of the things that just happened this past week, actually last Sunday, a massive radioactive leak was discovered at Hanford Nuclear Reservation in Washington. Brianna Blasch reported on this. She's from True Activists. She says officials have stated that the original container holding the radioactive material has slowly been trickling out roughly 70 gallons since 2011, though they have not determined what accelerated the problem. They are set to begin pumping an estimated 3,000 to 3,500 gallons of waste back into storage containers. She says it comes as no surprise that the federal government was well aware of the waste issue at the site, even approving a $2 billion initiative years ago to fund the contamination cleanup over the course of the next several decades. However, they have only recently begun to make their moves on this plan. Program launched this March with a first major step to remove about 800,000 gallons from the compromised tank to a stable one. Prior to the leak found on Sunday, officials estimated the tank was almost completely empty, with only about 45,000 gallons remaining. Their estimates were clearly proven wrong and have caused a chain reaction in which all other efforts at the site have been postponed until the spill is controlled. Anyway, the article goes on from there. It's up on the website if you want to take a look at it. I won't go through the whole thing. Certainly, nuclear plants, nuclear facilities, are a concern, a major concern. If it can't be done safely, then maybe it shouldn't be done. But I think there's a lot of efforts that can be made to modernize. There's a lot of newer technology that we're not using. And this is a big problem. If we're going to be in this nuclear thing, we got to have energy, obviously. And windmills, that chop up birds, solar panels. It's not a viable industry, number one. And number two, doesn't generate reliable energy. These are problems. This is why companies keep going bankrupt. And without government subsidies, they can't stay in business. But you have, if you're going to do nuclear, you not need to do it right. You need to have the newest technology. You need to modernize and stay on top of it. Otherwise, you're just putting the entire world at risk. And endangered species, listeners, we're all endangered species. We're all endangered species. We've talked about the scourge of homeowners associations many times on the broadcast. We've had Shu Bartholomew, who does a show called On the Commons. We've had her on the show a number of times. Maybe we should be getting her back here pretty soon. Because we see from the Bay Area that, well, here's a thing from the East Bay Times. The Homeowners Association for this upscale gated community has threatened to fine homeowners. Now, they're in the middle of a drought, okay? But this Homeowners Association has threatened to fine homeowners for brown or dead lawns and landscaping despite a continuing state drought emergency. Mark Goldberg, the community manager for the association, in a letter that went out to 2,027 Black Hawk homes, he said last month, quote, "We believe that allowing the drought to negatively impact the landscaping at any Black Hawk home does a disservice to property values throughout the community and is a violation of our CC&Rs. So these people, this guy, this scumbag, these dirtbags are harassing these homeowners for trying to follow, I guess, trying to conserve water because water... Does this make any sense, folks? Effective June 1st, the association will begin aggressive enforcement, quote-unquote, aggressive enforcement of landscaping standards that could include issuing fines, filing lawsuits, doing landscaping improvements, and handing the bill to the homeowner or turning off gate clickers to enter the community. Hey, we don't care that there's a drought on. We don't care about that. Water your lawn, dirtbags. Because we here at the Homeowners Association, we can just magically issue a decree, see? We're kings of the world. And if we say you water your lawn, you water your lawn. If you have to, you know, I guess suck water right out of the air. Hey, run a dehumidifier if you have to. Unbelievable. Goldberg wrote, "We believe there is no longer any reason that all landscaping in the community cannot flourish as it once did." Mr. Goldberg, it's called a drought. There's no water. He conveniently did not return several phone messages from the good paper here. Ron Banducci, who is a president of the Black Hawk Homeowners Association, said his group isn't insisting on new lawns, but gives homeowners a choice to install low water use landscaping in brown or bare areas. So you got a choice. Isn't it great that the great and mighty, all-knowing, all-powerful, omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent Homeowners Association, the group of land gods, have granted you this incredible choice to install low water use landscaping. So you called compliance. Folks, it's called Agenda 21. That's what it's called. Moving along here, we hear see a lot about national monuments, wilderness areas. Here we see from BuzzFeed, Obama's next national monument could ignite fierce land battle in the West. 100 miles northwest of the Four Corners, two buttes rise out of the red dirt and scrubby brush. The buttes, named for their earth sign appearance, are known as Bear's Ears. But for the visitors of this remote corner of Utah, the glowing sandstone and hawks gliding overhead might distract from what the area is becoming, a battleground. This sprawling 1.9 million acre parcel of land may soon become a new national monument, a protected space similar to a national park. There are a few ways for a place to obtain that status, but in the case of Bear's Ears, all eyes are currently trained on President Obama, who can declare a national monument with a wave of his pen. And there is the problem, listeners. If your commander, your president, quote-unquote, if he can declare a national monument with the wave of his pen, then what does that tell you about what we have here? A dictatorship. There's no way this sleazebag red in the Oval Office should have this kind of power. But he does. And why does he have this power? I'll tell you why he has this power. Because Congress gave theirs away. That's why. And could Congress take it back? You better believe they could. At any time, they could take back their power. And gee, we hear a lot of, when the Democrats were controlling Congress, we heard an awful lot about, oh, those Democrats. Oh, if we could just get Republicans in there, oh, everything would be fine. Oh, you know, all this stuff. Well, what have the Republicans done? Have the Republicans reversed the Clean Water Act, listeners? Have they even talked about it? No, they haven't. Have the Republicans defunded the EPA? No, they haven't. I mean, just go right down the list. Fish and Wildlife Service. All these federal agencies. The federal family, as they call themselves. You know, I think about members of the family that are the most undesirable members of the family. You know, the person, the uncle or something that you don't want to come to family dinners. the ill-mannered member of the family that everyone shirks. Yeah, that's your federal family. Everybody in the federal government is like that person. Okay? There's one in every family. Anyway. The sprawling 1.9 million acre parcel of land may soon become a new national monument, a protected space similar to a national park. There are a few ways for a place to obtain that status, but in the case of Bear's Ears, it's going to be Obama. The president just created three national monuments in California, three of them. Together with existing conservation areas in the region, the national monuments create the second largest desert preserve in the world. The second largest. See, Obama's looking for a legacy, listeners. Every so-called president that we have tries to go out with a bang. Every single one of them do their best to do as much damage to this nation as possible before they head toward the exit door. And this sleazebag is no exception. And the next sleazebag won't be any exception until you have no country left. Until America is only America on paper. Last year, the president created a 704,000 acre national monument called Basin and Range in Nevada, as well as others in California and Texas. In 2013, Obama designated a handful of new monuments, including several in western states. And this is what the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge standoff was all about, listeners. This is what it was all about. because they're eating up more and more land. They're persecuting ranchers to have more and more of these protected areas. Why should we care about the West, huh? Well, they only feed you. And the West is broad, wide-open spaces. That's where most of the free land is. I say free because what I mean is it's not developed. Certainly it's not free because the federal government owns most of it, controls most of it, even though there's nothing in the Constitution that gives them the authority or the right to do this. Anyway, they say in each of these cases, Obama cited the Antiquities Act, which, by the way, the Republicans in Congress could revoke. They could undo the Antiquities Act. Why aren't they even talking about it, ladies and gentlemen? Because they are just as bad as the Democrats. That's the bottom line. There's no difference. They're all against property rights. They're all for consolidation of federal power. And that's the thing that everyone needs to realize. The only difference between Republicans and Democrats is the Republicans pretend, where the Democrats don't even bother pretending to care about property rights. That's the only difference. Because at the end of the day, the end result is the same. In each of these cases, Obama cited the Antiquities Act, a relatively obscure law dating back to 1906 that's designed to protect things like archaeological sites. The law gives a president wide-ranging discretion to set aside public lands, and it has been used by chief executives of both political parties, and there you have it. Bill Clinton used it to create the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument, for example. In Utah, George W. Bush used the law to set aside. Big long name, which I can't pronounce. But both of them have used it, proving once again that destroying America, listeners, is a bipartisan effort. Also from BuzzFeed, we see feds signal they're ready to rumble over Western land. They say the U.S. Interior Secretary blasted an extreme movement to seize public lands as frustration among ranchers in the West continues to simmer, leading to standoffs. They say there's a battle brewing in the West and the feds are ready to take off the gloves. In a speech that seemed a bit like a battle cry Tuesday, U.S. Interior Secretary Sally Jewell laid out a broad vision, listeners, for conservation in the U.S., calling for renewed efforts to fund national parks, reaching out to a more diverse group of Americans, and cultivating new generations of people who appreciate parks. But the address also included a strong response to recent conflicts in the West, those conflicts including the standoff at the Oregon Wildlife Refuge, the Bundy family's confrontation with the feds in 2014, and several other skirmishes were sparked by the federal government's management of vast tracts of land in western states. No, it wasn't sparked by the federal government's management. It was sparked by the federal government's mismanagement and persecution. And I come back to the Hages, which we talked about last week, who were being harassed, by the feds, 52 weeks in a year, and they were visited over 80 times, if I recall correctly, in that year, averaging over a visit a week, picking them apart. You know, we were talking about homeowners associations a moment ago. This is the kind of thing that many homeowners associations do to tenants when they want to get rid of them or they want to take control of your land. They get overbearing. They get to the point where they're just on you every day. This is how the federal government this is how your federal family operates. Here we see from KUTV. Governor Gary Herbert, he's apparently the governor for Utah. He's calling on for a special legislative session to address two separate issues for Utah. Herbert is concerned that President Obama may declare a national monument in Utah. He also wants to restore funds from the Senate bill that didn't cross his desk intact with a $4.8 million marked for education initiatives. He's looking at passing anti-monument resolutions. And to educate, I guess, the public on this, I think we need more than a resolution, Mr. Governor. Your state needs to stand up and take the land and make it illegal to take away the land. Kick the feds out. That's what you need to do. And the states have the ability to do this. This is our only answer. I sound like a broken record. I've been saying it since I've been on the air. The only answer you have is state authority. The state standing up and kicking the scumbag feds out. That is the only answer. Short of that, you're going to lose. You're going to lose it all. Eventually, they will swallow everything. There already are. You can see it happening. Every single administration contributes to this, Republican and Democrat alike. Herbert said, quote, "It is absolutely irresponsible for the Obama administration to consider a new national monument that is over 2.5 times the size of Rhode Island, For some reason, I can't talk today, and I apologize. I think the coffee's a little slow at kicking in today. But over 2.5 times the size of Rhode Island without input from Utahns from across the state, who will be significantly impacted by this decision." He says, "As governor of the state of Utah, I have stated repeatedly that I oppose such a declaration. Today, I am asking every member of the state legislature to go on record and join me in expressing our opposition to another unilateral national monument within the state." Interior Secretary, and that was the end of that quote. Now, Sally Jewell plans to visit Utah. She's the Interior Secretary, as we mentioned, over summer, to hear about proposals for conserving public lands. The Obama administration has told Herbert no national monument will be designated in Utah without an open public process occurring first. And of course, we know about these processes, listeners. Yeah, the ones where they get you in there and not let you talk, or they break you up into little groups with a facilitator in each group. And they dialogue you all into consensus. The Delphi technique. Look it up. This is what's being used today. So there's your process. That's what they're going to do. The answer is the state standing up and saying no. Pass a law that say that makes it illegal to have any monuments. If they want to come and try to send their officers in, you arrest them. This is how to do it. Folks, if you get enough people, and this is why education is very important, get enough people that understand this stuff, you can put a stop to this kind of stuff. There are some things you can't stop. Some things the federal government is involved in is very difficult to deal with. The wars in the Middle East and around the world, the destabilizations of governments, those things are harder to deal with because those are international issues. And now, there are ways the states could make inroads to starve the federal government of funding and try to get back the money system. Those are not quite as easy, but this land thing, the states could conquer this. And truly, the land is something of value. It's really arguably the only thing we have left aside from our labor, which is also taxed, our time, which is also taxed through the income tax. But the land is really the only thing of value that the people still have left. And yes, I realize you don't really own it if you have to pay extortion on it. But again, that could be stopped at a state issue. That's a state issue. we're almost up to the break already. Man, time's just flying by. Here we see from the Albuquerque Journal. State says it will sue U.S. Fish and Wildlife over wolf release plan. We talked about the wolves in the past with Jim Beers many times. What a danger they are to people, to livestock. Huge problem out west. And the feds keep releasing more and more wolves. Now we have New Mexico. New Mexico officials have notified the federal government that they just this past week, I believe this was put out, well, April 19th, that they will sue to block the planned release of more Mexican gray wolves without the state's okay. Well, while I commend their thought to try to fight back, again, what good is it going to do to sue the federal government in federal court? Just say no. Just say no. Do the Nancy Reagan on them, man. Pass a law. Make it illegal. You don't need to sue them. Bottom of the hour. We'll be back. This is Govern America.
If you care about liberty, you already know. Little by little is how it all goes.
All right, we're back. This is Govern America. I'm Darren Weeks. Talking about Agenda 21, talking about the wilderness areas and the national monuments, national parks. There's an energy bill now in Congress right now, speaking of all of these land-grabbing efforts. A bipartisan energy bill, and this is the Albuquerque Journal also, it's moving through the Senate, includes the creation of two new wilderness areas within the Rio Grande del Norte National Monument near Taos. Also includes Senator Martin Heinrich's proposal to boost public access to federal lands for recreation. The Senate is debating the energy bill on the floor this week, a proposal by Senator Tom Udall of New Mexico to establish a so-called clean energy victory bonds, similar to war bonds sold in the past. That notion was rejected by the Republican-controlled Senate today. So there's a few things the Republicans apparently are putting a check on. But if the Republicans wanted to, they could undo all of this, listeners, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, this is something that everyone needs to be aware of, this energy bill containing two wilderness areas, brand new. Heinrich's Hunt Act, which was included in the Senate bill on Tuesday, would require public land agencies to identify high-priority landlocked public lands currently lacking legal public access. Landlocked public lands are technically open to the public, but are sometimes impossible to reach legally because there are no public trails or roads leading to them. Anyway, you can look at that. All of this will be in the show notes, by the way, for your perusal later on today. We see also Sally Jewell, Interior Secretary. This comes from the website timberjay.com. The political tea leaves are looking increasingly ominous for the future of the Twin Metals copper-nickel project near Ely, they say. In a major speech before the National Geographic Society in Washington, D.C., on Tuesday, U.S. Interior Secretary Sally Jewell identified 1.1 million acre Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness as one of three, quote-unquote, special places where the Obama administration is reexamining decisions by previous administrations to see whether they, quote, properly considered where it makes sense to develop and where it doesn't, unquote. Do you see what's going on here, ladies and gentlemen? Place after place after place. The feds are grabbing. Place after place. They're putting more land. They're locking more land up. for human activity, and for development. Now, what do you think is going to happen, those of you who have properties out in the East? After they're done in the West, what do you think they're going to do? They're already doing it. It's called homeowners associations, like we mentioned earlier. But the cities are being redesigned to be sustainable. And with the communitarian law, that the court ruling, Kelo versus New London, development can ultimately end up in the hands of only the most wealthy. Only if you have the money will you be able to own and control land and cities. This is the future. And you talk about future generations. You talk about people being able to live. I can't imagine. I bleed for future generations. Things are this bad now. They don't have a prayer unless we get active. They don't have a prayer unless we do our part. We need more people aware and understanding the importance of property rights. This is something that gets pushed to the back burner all the time. They say in this piece, Secretary Jewell's comments reflect her department's current reexamination of two long-standing federal mineral leases near the Boundary Waters. For Twin Metals, which currently holds the expired leases, renewal is critical to the company's plans to develop a copper-nickel mine several miles southeast of Ely. While the secretary never mentions the leases directly during her speech, 8th District Congressman Rick Nolan said there was no doubt about the meaning of her reference, and he said it suggests that the Obama administration may be leaning towards a presidential declaration to permanently, quote-unquote, protect the Rainy River watershed from mining. He says, I got physically sick. I was so disturbed by it. He added that he sees a well-orchestrated campaign behind the recent push for non-renewal of the mineral leases. Now, my question is, have any of these areas that have ever been declared protected, have they ever been unprotected? Not that I recall. So if he goes ahead and does this, and see, this again puts the lie to the notion that we have this two-party system here is going to protect you. Because a Republican, anything that's put into effect by executive order by a Democrat president could be undone by executive order by a Republican president. Why don't they do it? Why don't they do it, ladies and gentlemen? I think you know the answer to that. Because this is classic good cop, bad cop nonsense. We're the good guys. They're the bad guys. You need to deal with me. They're all on the same team, folks. We have one party, and guess what? You're not invited to the party. That's become very apparent. But you do get to foot the bill. Congratulations. Anyway, I'm not sure how much of this I'm going to read. It'll be in the show notes. There's a lot more to that article. In the interest of time, I'll move on. Here we see another one. Denver Post. Secretary Jewell calls for major course correction in conservation. Jewell says natural areas in the West nationwide disappearing at a rate of a football field every 2.5 minutes. Now, if you believe that, I've got some oceanfront property I'll sell you, too. Real cheap, ladies and gentlemen. Denver Post says natural areas in the United States are disappearing at a rate of a football field every 2.5 minutes, and dangerous movements threaten public lands, Interior Secretary Sally Jewell said Tuesday, urging increased conservation efforts that embrace young Americans. Well, gee, why do we want to embrace young Americans? I'll tell you why. Because young Americans, ladies and gentlemen, are stupid. That's why. And what better minds to put your ideas in than minds that are empty? They don't have any knowledge. They don't have any experience. This is why she wants to embrace young Americans. Because young Americans believe what they're told until they have a reason to not believe what they're told. And by then, They're old Americans. You see how this works? And there's new young Americans to take their place. Anyway, Jewell said in a speech in Washington, D.C., we as a country need to make a major course correction in how we approach conservation to ensure a bright future for our public land and waters. Bright future. You mean like the bright glow of wildfires? That's probably the bright future she's talking about because, hey, when I look out west and I see all the land that the federal government is managing, that's what I see. The bright glow of wildfire. There's your bright future, listeners. Yeah, the owls, spotted owls, going up in smoke. The nice feathery crisp. Anyway, land grabs for development, population growth, and climate change are to blame, she said. And smarter landscape scale planning and attention to deteriorating park infrastructure are essential. So the battleground, the battle lines are being drawn. Obama administration is bound and determined to do everything they can to destroy as much of this country as they can before they leave. And who's going to replace him? Probably Hillary Clinton. Sorry to say. So, 8 more years, more than likely, of destruction, devastation, unless the states stand up and do what's right. In the meantime, according to KTIC Radio, 145 House members are demanding answers from the EPA on their anti-farmer campaign. Dan Newhouse, who is a Republican in Washington, he is the House Agriculture Committee chairman, Mike Conaway, Republican from Texas, and Representative Brad Ashford. They were joined by 142 members on a bipartisan letter to the EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy, who, in my opinion, should be behind bars. I mean, this woman sat at that administration as they took that gold mine and, in my opinion, deliberately caused the contamination of those rivers. We talked about that when it happened. And there, the whole idea was creating Congressional Superfund. The Superfund idea was pushed back. My memory's failing me. Love Canal. That's where the Superfund stuff came along. And in true Hegelian fashion, if you have a crisis of epidemic proportions, huge proportions, you can push for Superfund. Superfund funding. And one of the environmentalists who was retired saw what the EPA was doing. He wrote an op-ed piece. We shared it on the show. And he said he believes that they were after the funding. They were trying to create a situation. The local officials had told them, had warned them not to do that, not to mess around the mine. They did it anyway, created a big disaster. Anyway, this piece says from KTIC, the members request answers on EPA Region 10's funding of whatsupstream.com. That was a website, an advocacy campaign in Washington state that attempts to influence legislators for greater regulation of farmers and ranchers. So you don't think that there is a war on farmers and ranchers, ladies and gentlemen? Representative Newhouse said, federal law is clear, and the EPA knows better than to be engaged in the misuse of taxpayer dollars for anti-farmer publicity campaigns that lobby for more regulations. Despite previous EPA violations of federal laws pertaining to funding propaganda, advocacy, and lobbying efforts, it is troubling that the EPA has allowed taxpayer funds to be used to attack farmers. The EPA must be held accountable to cooperate fully with oversight investigations and to end the pattern of taxpayer-funded lobbying efforts. Now, Chairman Conaway says this is one more example of the lack of appropriate oversight by EPA. I applaud Representative Newhouse and many of my colleagues for holding EPA accountable for the unlawful misuse of federal funds. Well, gee, this is what I'm talking about here, folks. These Republicans go on and they say good things, good-sounding things, but Mr. Conaway and Mr. Newhouse, if you really want to deal with this problem, just cut the EPA off. Tell them no more funding for you. Sorry, too bad for you. You won't get another penny from this Congress. Let the EPA wither on the vine. Why is there still federal funding for the EPA? That's my question. Why does it still exist? You see, if there's no funding for it, it can't exist. And these Congress critters continue to, they blow steam. They say good-sounding things, but at the end of the day, they still keep funneling money to them. Why? And you could say, well, gee, you know, if they don't have an EPA, who's going to manage our lands? Who's going to manage the environment? The same people that did it before the EPA came along, folks. That's the job of state government, not federal government. If the states find an area that needs to be protected, preserved, hey, the states can deal with it. And you know what? If the people don't like it, they can go into those state capitals and throw the bums out. And put in different people who will listen to them. Try doing that in Congress. Try going into Congress and throwing anybody out. You'll end up with a felony and in federal penitentiary. But you see, this is how the games are played. We scream, we moan, we bellyache, we complain, we make speeches with our polished hair, every single hair in place, our ties just right in front of the cameras. We make a lot of fancy speeches, but at the end of the day, we do nothing. Why? Because they're all on the same team. That's the problem. Sorry, I'm just saying it like I think, like I see it. Here we see from E&E Publishing, leaked BLM sage-grouse draft memo sparked fears. This was just a few days ago, April 20th. In early March, at a hotel in downtown Denver, delegates for Western governors were handed paper copies of the Bureau of Land Management draft instruction memo on how to ensure cattle grazing does not harm habitat for the greater sage-grouse. The draft document caused a stir for some members of the state federal sage-grouse task force, who are working closely with the Obama administration to ensure that the bird, which narrowly avoided an Endangered Species Act listing, can thrive alongside public land users, including thousands of ranchers. The memo and an attachment described how BLM might respond if domestic cattle were found to gobble up too much of the grass that grouse needed to hide their nests from predators. BLM might consider delaying or shortening grazing seasons or allowing fewer cows to roam the range, it said. Quote, we have concerns over how they are written and what they could mean for ranchers in Idaho, unquote, said Dustin Miller, a top natural resources aide to Idaho Governor Butch Otter, whose administration is challenging BLM's sage-grouse plans in a federal district court in Washington, D.C. And there you have it. Another lawsuit in federal court. Begging your masters to do right by you. My question is, why is Butch Otter, why is his administration working with the Obama administration in the first place? Ladies and gentlemen, quit suing the federal government in federal court. You're begging your masters, oh, please, please play play nice with me. Please give us relief. And why should they? Who do you think the federal courts are representing, folks? They're federal courts. When the states have the power to issue the laws. It just keeps going. Moving along here, we see tempers flare amid national monument speculation in Utah. We pretty much already covered that with the other piece, so I'm not going to bother to deal with that again. From Washington Examiner, bad idea. Department of Defense spent $6 million on a failed goat meeting project. So we're dealing with a federal government that's so incompetent, listeners. Apparently, they can't even make goats mate. They can't even have lawmakers themselves couldn't seem to believe that Friday's House Armed Services Committee hearing on waste in Afghanistan involved discussing a herd of Italian goats. Jackie Speier, who's a Democrat from California, ranking member of the House Armed Services Subcommittee on Oversight. Yeah, like there's any oversight. Oversight and investigations hearings, referencing a satirical news show on HBO. He says this is the kind of stuff that belongs on Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. I didn't even know that was a show. It shows how much I watch TV. Anyway, the Pentagon spent $6.1 million shipping Italian male goats. Now get this. This is how your money's being spent. And you know, at a time when the VA is a mess, we're not taking care of the vets. I don't agree with with creating the vets. But once you've destroyed these people's lives, I think you have an obligation to take care of them, make sure they're well cared for. And we're failing miserably at that. Because they don't care. They don't care. Everything is being turned on its head today. There's money for endless wars. There's money for anything they want to do. But we can't take care of our nation's veterans. The Pentagon spent $6.1 million shipping Italian male goats to Afghanistan to mate with female Afghan goats to make cashmere as one of several initiatives to boost the Afghan economy after the war. Can you believe this? Well, sure we can believe it, because you know what? This is how the federal government, your federal family, operates all the time. Unfortunately, however, many of the female goats were infected with a disease. It could have wiped out the whole herd, Speier said. As a result, only two of these fancy Italian goats are still usable. He said, I think we can safely say that manufacturing warm, fluffy sweaters is not the key to economic recovery in Afghanistan. Nor is it in the Department of Defense's expertise. Well, I thought that's what the opium trade was all about, was helping the Afghan economy. I thought that was what, isn't that what our soldiers were over there doing, guarding the poppy fields? They say lawmakers at the hearing hammered the Pentagon for wasting taxpayer dollars rebuilding Afghan economy and infrastructure. But again, they're not going to do anything to defund the wars. They keep passing those National Defense Authorization Acts every single year, don't they? They keep allocating more and more funding for this stuff, don't they? See how this works? Moving along here, we see from the USA Today, Justice Department won't block CIA interrogation suit. Another thing that should be completely defunded and wiped off the map is the Department of Homeland Security, which is not about security. It's all about security theater and providing an excuse to surveil everything you do. here in the homeland. Notice it's the homeland today. Because we used to have national security. Now we have homeland security. Why? Because your nation is being taken away from you. That's why. USA Today says the Justice Department has signaled that it won't try to block a lawsuit arising from the CIA's harsh interrogation techniques. Harsh interrogation. It's called torture, ladies and gentlemen. But no, no, no. It sounds much, much more nice, much more politically correct when we say, oh, it's harsh. Harsh interrogation. So even the establishment press routinely softens the blow. There's no excuse for torturing people. I don't care what Dick Cheney says. Well, unless it's Dick Cheney. And I would get behind, well, I'll just leave it alone. Anyway, they said it leaves the door open for a court challenge over tactics that have since been discredited and widely discontinued and widely discredited. Well, has it really been discontinued? That's the big question, ladies and gentlemen. How do we know? How do we know? There's no way to know. How do we know how many prisons, secret prisons, the CIA has around the world? How do we know that? There's no way to know that. Because it's all classified. All right, we're out of this hour already. Much, much, much more to come. So please stay with us. Hour number three of Govern America is straight ahead. And if you'd like to call in, toll-free number, 1-844-646-8376. 1-844-646-8376. We'll be back. All right, we're back. This is Govern America. GovernAmerica.com is the website. That's GovernAmerica.com. Chat room is chat.governamerica.com. That's chat.governamerica.com. And also my email address is radio@governamerica.com. And always glad to hear from the listeners, people in the listening audience. Phone number if you'd like to call in, 1-844-646-8376. That's toll-free, 1-844-6-GOVERN. As we continue on here, we see Homeland Security. I mentioned earlier, and of course, we just had another shooting incident, and it seems like we have these all the time, and the media is selective about which ones they're going to promote in a big way. And what it's kind of interesting how the Department of Homeland Security, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives now, is going around, apparently, well, there's these strange mystery boxes appearing on poles. Evidently across the country, I guess. Here's a report from ABC 15 in Phoenix, Arizona.
Tonight, it'll make you ask, am I being watched? And we guarantee you'll be checking out your own neighborhood after you get the full story on this one. ABC 15's John Erickson live tonight in Phoenix. And John, a mysterious discovery on that street.
And Steve, this area is used to some surveillance. Within the last 2 minutes, the crime bird, the police helicopter, was spotlighting a car literally right next to us. It's left for now. But a man who lives in the house behind us says that he thinks there was a different kind of surveillance going on with some sort of mystery box attached to that power pole right behind his house. He says it was looking out toward the intersection here, 21st Avenue in Glendale.
I think it was a surveillance box.
Camera,
yes.
Are they watching you or are they watching somebody else?
I doubt they're watching me, but they could be watching somebody else. It's just they got somebody involved and they didn't have the courtesy to let us know.
He wanted to be let know of it. This is some video he took of it being removed by SRP. He says the box was too close to the power line that was leading to his house. He didn't like that, thought it was a safety hazard, and he also didn't like the idea of possibly being watched. SRP tells us that it looks like the box was from law enforcement, but they wouldn't elaborate. Brian says Phoenix PD told him that it wasn't from them.
It is a high crime area, and the box would not make me feel any safer at all.
Why?
Well, I'm not sure what the box is. If they want to encourage public safety, get the public involved in that safety.
So to add to the mystery tonight, he says the people who installed it were in a utility truck marked Field Pros. We Googled that name and looked through the Arizona Directory of Businesses. Doesn't exist as far as a utility or security company goes. SRP says no one ran it by them as far as putting anything on that pole.
Very interesting. Let's hope we can, at some point, get to the bottom of it.
Okay,
thanks, John.
So these boxes went up. First of all, I want to say respond to one thing that the gentleman said. I'm sure he doesn't know any better, but no, we don't need to get the public involved in safety, okay? Because that's what the community-oriented policing services attempts to do. Draft the entire community into the policing process, and basically what you're doing is turning your entire neighborhood, your entire city into a snitch on your neighbors, snitch on everything everybody does. Okay, there's a difference between watching out for crime and reporting crime and having whole programs which turn the entire world into a bunch of snitches. And that's what they—that's what community-oriented policing service is all about. So I do have to caution you on that. But this surveillance box thing, apparently there are lots of locations in Phoenix where these are going up. There are other places around the country. I know that, if you remember, Lavoie Fennecom took down one of these types of boxes. And what do they do? As I recall, Vicki Davis had written a piece about these boxes. I should have called this. I wish now I had dug her piece up. Chat room, I'll tell you what. If you can find that article, if you could post that in the chat room, that would be great. Because I know she wrote an article about Lavoie Fennecom and them taking down that box off the pole. And expanded upon a little bit more about what the box was. But anyway, this KTLA, or ABC 15, excuse me, this local news outlet, they done a little more digging and actually had, after they exposed the fact that these boxes were popping up in different locations around Phoenix, had a revelation about where they came from.
It's trending online from coast to coast tonight. Answers on that mystery box at the top of a Phoenix power pole. ABC 15's Kim Tobin joins us live on this one from 21st Avenue in Glendale. And Kim, the feds are now claiming the box, but not really saying much more than that.
Not saying a whole lot tonight, Katie. The ATF, the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Bureau, saying that this box is theirs, but they're not commenting on this investigation, not saying if they're doing any surveillance. We're keeping people who live here updated on what we've learned. Even with the box gone now, they still feel like their privacy rights have been violated.
So, no, I don't feel any safer at all.
Not safer, and now Brian Clegg feels like Big Brother is breathing down his back.
Maybe higher than my home, but nonetheless, still aimed at my home.
Clegg noticed the suspicious box last week, curious if there were surveillance cameras inside it. After he made some calls, the box was taken down from the SRP power pole.
An invasion of my privacy.
Around the area, homes, a high school, an apartment complex, and a strip mall with pet grooming, an ammunition shop, and a barber shop.
But for you to just put something up there, you know, without telling somebody, it makes it seem like you're doing something grimy.
Kevin Moreno, the manager of Patron's Barber Shop, doesn't like the idea of anyone watching him.
It makes you feel really scared of what they're looking for and they're not telling you about it. Like, what's really going on, you know?
But there are many who don't question it. Clegg has talked to a lot of people whose viewpoints don't match his.
They say if the government needs to put it there, that's fine with them. And that worries me.
Now, SRP claims that they had no idea this box was there. They say if ATF is going to put something on their property, they need to be notified. ATF tells me, really, that's not always the case. And here, in this investigation, they say, quote, we acted within our bounds. Obviously, this is a story we will keep following up on and letting this neighborhood know if we learn anything new on this, Katie. But obviously, tonight we can see the rain is going to be the talk of this neighborhood and a lot of places in the valley as we are dealing with the rain.
Yeah, and traffic and weather together on the 8th, folks. Anyway, I just thought that was worthy of pointing out. The federal government now putting surveillance boxes on poles. And what do these boxes do? That's the question. More and more surveillance going on all the time. Even as the federal government, we've talked a lot about how your local police department is under major attack to be taken over by the feds. This process is ever creeping more and more all the time. Funding mechanisms, staged false flag events like riots, the Justice Department, which is about anything but justice, is targeting your local police. And now we have Homeland Security training Texas cops to deal with riots. InfoWars, the Department of Homeland Security, oversaw a first-of-its-kind three-day training exercise in Texas this week, during which police officers from 15 different departments took part in drills on how to deal with riots and conduct mass arrests. Dozens of McLennan Community College students posed as unruly demonstrators during the drill, which took place at the McLennan Community College Emergency Services Education Center. Jay Fonville told the Waco Tribune, quote, "This type of training has never been in Texas before," unquote. Cops learned how to counter domestic and civil disturbances during the training, which was coordinated by DHS's Center for Domestic Preparedness. Well, gee, ladies and gentlemen, what are they preparing for? Mass arrests? Riots? What's going to happen to cause all these riots and mass arrests? You know, as our nation is getting more and more, we're hearing more and more warnings about economic calamity from the very people that are causing it. You know, we got rich people buying bunkers now, underground bunkers in a major way. We talked about that last week. We've talked about it in previous shows before that. What are they planning for? What's being engineered, ladies and gentlemen? Is it something that they're going to be using? You know, the Earth Firsters, the people that, like Paul Ehrlich, they want to see you pushing up daisies? Are they engineering some calamity that's going to cause mass unrest? That's the question I have when I see this. Why can't we just have peace? Anyway, we got a caller on the line. I'm going to go ahead and take the caller. Hello, caller. You're on the air. Who do we have?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'm on speakerphone. Do I sound okay?
You sound good at the moment.
Okay, this is Mike from Maryland, otherwise formerly known as Meat Dog, D-A-W-G. Listen, I want to, great show as always.
Thank you.
I miss Vicki Davis having her on here. Is she okay?
Yeah, she's on here, you know, on her... We have her on pretty regularly still. It's just been a few weeks.
Okay, well, you know, I hope she's doing okay. I want to bring something to your attention. I mean, it's a rare time that I could scoop a story on you, and you probably heard about this, but I want to get your input on it.
Mm-hmm.
I've called into a couple of other shows about it, and nobody seems to... you know, maybe make, you know, confirm it or deny it, but from what I understand, this past Tuesday, China went to the gold standard, gold-backed yuan or renminbi, and there was a concomitant story along with it that China also, and I can't confirm this definitely, I know the first part's true, but this part, I don't know, maybe you might need more confirmation on it, that China is no longer going to accept the dollar in trade. Now, I don't know if that's countries other than America or all countries. And if that's the case, I mean, that's a pretty dire situation for trade for the American economy. Have you heard anything about both of those?
Well, I do know that, in fact, I got an article here from the street. As you were talking, I typed it in. Chinese gold standard could create fireworks. them dumping the dollar, they've been threatening economic warfare for years against the dollar. And it wouldn't surprise me. I haven't heard anything specifically about them completely dumping the dollar, but they have threatened to do that. And then they haven't, you know, they've caved. So I'm sure the diplomats will be over there doing everything they can to prevent this. But, you know, I hear more and more saber-rattling going on in these congressional hearings about the threat that China poses. You know, and I know militarily they do pose a threat, but why do they pose a threat? Because we built them up to be a threat through insane trade agreements. And you know, our military, I mean, does it make any sense to you that components for our you know, military gear, these electrical components be made in China? You know, it doesn't make any sense to me, because if I were the Chinese, I would be creating back doors to be able to shut down this stuff, you know, at critical times. You know, if there's ever a war here, we're going to be disabled because they're going to pull the plug on all of our gear. But yet this continues to go on. So I don't know. You know, I mean, the thing is that this is something they've been threatening for many, many years. Will they follow through on it? I don't know. But that's about all I can say about that.
Well, there's got to come a time when not just China, but all countries, it's got to dawn on them that accepting the dollar for their oil, for their finished goods, electronics, cars, textiles, furniture, you name it, there's like a law of diminishing returns when these countries are going to have to cut their losses and say, I mean, what's the point in accepting the dollar for tangible goods? I mean, I don't know when that's going to happen, but this three-ring circus can't go on forever.
Well, every indication is that they're planning for the ultimate collapse of the dollar. And I mean, I think the fact that these banks around the world now are warning us that tough times are ahead, I think that the fact that various countries and various people, some of them very powerful, even media outlets, are promoting the idea of a cashless society is another clue that this thing is right around the corner. They don't start trumping, you know, whenever they're trying to push an idea, an agenda, they start beating it in the media. You know, and I've seen recently where they're talking about smartphones replacing currency. I forget the year that they said that this was going to supposedly happen by. But these ideas are being pushed actively all the time. And so the general public isn't going to transition to these systems without some kind of major crisis. There's still going to be holdouts that are still going to be using cash. They got to get the people off the cash. So I hate to sound dark.
Well, once we go to a cashless society, it's pretty much game over because we'll be totally at their mercy.
There you go.
We'll be serfs for sure.
Absolutely. The only thing that will really, and that's why they want to do it. The only thing that we would be able to do at that point is you'll still have some property. The problem is every transaction. Every single transaction can be tracked. And for revenue purposing, the IRS would be able to literally track private transactions, which is something they've always coveted. I mean, when you and I, if we meet up and engage in a transaction using cash or using regular property, for that matter, you know, I mean, you still will be able to barter. And I think, honestly, I think there'll be a resurgence in you know, bartering, you know, the way that it was done before currencies came along. Okay. But right now we can engage in transactions without the federal government having its nose in it. But more and more we've seen the federal government, you know, cooperating with the banks. A lot of this stuff has been done under the guise of fighting terrorism. You know, the banks have to, or identity theft, or credit card fraud, or various other computer crime frauds. The bottom line is, though, is they've had no shortage of excuses to continually crack down on privacy as far as banking is concerned. And this isn't by accident. And what you're talking about there is the ultimate end game, where they want to take everything, where everything can be tracked. So, and what is the answer to this? Well, the only thing I can say is more people have to come out against it. You know.
Yep.
More people. I mean, I come back to the states, because certainly the federal government is owned and controlled by the Federal Reserve, the private banking cartel that has had this nation under a clamp since 1913. So
if you don't mind me changing subjects for a minute, and I don't want to dominate the airwaves here, but you may be talking to a former Donald Trump supporter, because when he came out and said that he was for so-called transgenders using women's restrooms, that was a deal breaker for me. And not just bathrooms, but, you know, you're going to have some weirdos, you know, some perverts say, oh, I feel like a woman today. I think I'll take a shower in the women's locker room. I mean, Donald Trump came out in support of that. I mean, does he realize what he's doing? Is he pandering to liberal voters in the Northeast in the upcoming primaries? I mean, I think
Donald Trump is a liberal.
A bunch of flack over that.
Yeah, I think Donald Trump is a liberal at heart. I think that's who he is, and he did. We played audio from him last week. He made a Freudian slip, saying that referencing the Republican Party. He says it's even worse on their side, and he referenced the Republican Party. You know, I think he's a spoiler, and I think he ultimately. The problem is there's so many things about Trump that if you really look at it objectively, and I understand why people in the Patriot effort believe that he's a candidate that's going to. I mean, he makes a lot of good noises. The problem I've seen with Trump over and over and over again is if he has any opposition with anything that he says, it's like he's going to stand on principle. He sounds real tough when he talks, but as soon as he gets any pushback, he caves. If it's enough, you know, widespread pushback, he caves. We need a president that's going to stand on the Constitution. We need a president that's going to say, you know what, regardless of what the mass outcry is, this is what the Constitution says. If Trump really wanted to do something good for this country, he would pick up a copy of the Constitution, wave it in front of the camera, and say, American people, this is what our government is. This is what you go by, and this is what we're going to follow if I become president. And read it.
Well, to me, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
To me, it almost seems as if Donald Trump has no intrinsic core moral values or basic, you know, belief in liberty. It's almost as if he's amoral, and his primary interest in life is making money and marrying beautiful women.
Well, he's all in on the surveillance state. In fact, I wrote an article about his support, and he was asked about the Kelo versus New London decision, which devastated property rights in this country. And Trump says he thought eminent domain was wonderful. Now, there may be certain cases where eminent domain is necessary, but it's not wonderful. It's never wonderful. And he justified it by saying, well, you know, they get a lot of money for their property. Well, that's not true. Often they don't get what the property is worth. Yeah, because you're negotiating, you're trying to negotiate a price without having any advantage in the transaction. I mean, it's like trying to negotiate a settlement with the mob. Only you don't have the firepower that the mob has. Okay, that's eminent domain. But Trump is a developer. He's all in on this. He's all in on the surveillance state. He was asked about that, you know, and he says, oh, I tend to err on the side of security. Well, that's not what Benjamin Franklin said we should err on the side of. He said, if you, they that give up essential liberty to obtain a little temporary safety deserve neither. So, the problem is, I see, and then we played audio from him on the show, where he said, you know, and this is his flagship issue, where originally he was talking about the H-1B visas, and he reversed himself on that, said we need highly skilled people here, we need STEM workers here, so people coming here from foreign countries should be allowed to stay. I mean, so he's already started caving on that issue without even being in the Oval Office. This is a problem. You know, if you can't trust the guy to even get to the Oval Office first before he starts going back on his promises, something's really wrong. But, you know, to be fair, look at the other people who are running against him. They're no better. And Cruz, he's not even eligible to be president. And this is the problem.
It's crazy.
Yeah, he was born in Canada. Why isn't anybody talking about this? Here is a shoo-in for Hillary Clinton.
And I hear people like Mark Levin and Glenn Beck assiduously defending his candidacy. And don't these guys understand what natural-born citizen means? I mean, it's pretty straightforward and obvious.
Yeah, exactly, except that when they don't want it to be. You know, and any time I bring this up to anybody that I talk to, their response is, well, look at Obama. He was born in Kenya. That's not the point. Two wrongs don't make
a
right.
It's still a right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is not the point. But I think, you know, this is where, I mean, if Hillary Clinton, Ted Cruz are running against each other, you know, here's an easy win for Hillary. Because suddenly, natural-born citizen is going to matter. So.
I think you're right.
I don't know. I think we're looking at a Hillary Clinton presidency. Different people have suggested that she was promised that when Obama, you know, lay back, let Obama have it this time, you'll get it next time. I think that's plausible, very plausible. And we know she's not going to jail for her many crimes against this nation. Her scumbag impeached husband who stayed in office after he was impeached. Thank you, Congress. Hey, he didn't go to prison for any of his crimes. So
you're like selling missile technology to Red China?
Yeah, like
he ought to be hanged for that.
Well, all the stuff. I mean, you could just go down the list, man. I mean, it. Oh man, the crimes that this family has committed, the crimes that this couple, and the murders. My heavens, look at the murders. Anyway, I got to take a break. Thank you for your call there.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Appreciate it.
Yeah, God bless you, sir. All right, folks, we got to take the break. We'll be back in a moment. This is Government America, final half hour, straight ahead. Had a couple calls on the line, so we'll get to you right after we take the break. This is Government America. Don't go away.
Despite the darkness, we are not lost. Close by the flag, we're fighting for. And there's a brave new spirit in America, united forevermore. Don't tread on us, you cross the line.
All right, this is Government America. We're back. Back to the phones, 1-844-646-8376. That's toll-free, 1-844-646-8376. Let's go right now and caller on the line. And who do we have, caller?
Yeah, I don't know if you have any rule about callbacks, Darren, but this is Kent from West Virginia calling
in
again.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and your previous caller talking about Trump, my thoughts about Trump is this Make America Great. And again, maybe I've called and said this on your show before. If not, it would cut me off, but I try to tell this everywhere. But my thinking about this is that the greatness that, you know, the people are clamoring for Trump, the greatness that they remember is probably from living memory or from hearing from their parents, you know. And the greatness was from the economic boom of the 50s and 60s, and that was only the spoils of the Second World War, where the United States and its allies destroyed most of the industrial capacity of the world in Europe and in the East and Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Consequently, there was a big vacuum there that the American manufacturers, you know, filled, and all the factories and the mines and the mills were all humming and going gangbusters. And gradually, these, you know, economic manufacturing capability around the world has recovered, and now, you know, the American manufacturing has dwindled. And my thinking is that the only way to achieve this greatness that they envision, you know, that is in their mind, is for another war, which will again destroy the manufacturing capability around the world and allow America. And there's where Trump the builder, you hit on it, I think Trump's a builder, and you can imagine what
very lucrative.
Might have about reshaping the whole world, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, and see, that's the thing, is that the wars certainly won't end. But I don't think he's going to make it. I don't think he's ever going to be there. And, you know, there's a larger issue here, Ken, and that is the fact that why is so much attention being paid to the presidential campaign? Number one, we know the process is rigged. Okay? It's rigged at the primary level. It's rigged at the precinct level. And if all else fails, it's rigged with the computerized voting systems which permeate the landscape all across this country. Okay, so presidential elections are rigged. Okay, now you could say, well, congressional elections are as well. But I think it's interesting that Congress has the power to check the president. Congress has the power to stop the president. And I've hammered this all throughout this whole show, but because I think it's important. And yet nobody pays attention to the fact. Let's see. I just did a search. We have 469 congressional seats. 469. I think there's only 535 seats in Congress altogether. Most of Congress. There are 34 Senate seats and 435 House seats that are up for re-election in November of this year. Have you heard anything on the TV about this? Have you heard, is Fox News talking about this? CNN? Is CNBC? Has anybody even mentioned the fact that the vast majority of congressional seats are up for grabs in November?
No, it's hardly gets a whimper.
It's just about the one thing.
Yeah, it's on the television start here probably in maybe August or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so why aren't they talking about this? This is where more could actually get done if you got the right people in there. And, you know, again, it's all subject to the voting system. But, I mean, I just think it's interesting how they focus everyone's attention on one thing and ignore the congressional check on presidential power, which could be put into place if, in fact, people could get people in those positions. They don't want people organizing in mass scale to try to get people in Congress. And you know, so the media doesn't pay attention to congressional seat vacancies, and they certainly don't pay attention to your state government at all. It's all about the feds. So if there's one thing...
Here's another thing that dawned on me recently. I don't know how it... Is that we have, like you say, 432, I think, congressmen and you know, 100 senators. There's 535 altogether, mm-hmm. or something there, but and a population of 300 million. And I believe in Britain, never mind the House of Lords, I believe that there's about 700 or 800 MPs, members of Parliament, and they have a population of roughly 60. Let's say they're roughly 20% of our population. So, in other words, if we had the equivalent number of MP, congressmen, as they do have MPs, we'd have like about five times the Congress. We have about 2,000 congressmen. Mm. We'd have a lot, you know, when you consider each congressman's got, what, a district of, what, 500,000, between 500,000 and a million, you know. Really, that's it's a very thin democracy, you know, is what I'm saying, you know.
Yeah.
Never mind that they're all... These incumbents are always getting reelected and everything, you know.
Yeah, it's an even thinner thing when you consider that they're controlled by the European Commission. You know, and in fact, I got some Brexit stuff. If we have time, I'll cover in the waning moments of the broadcast. But listen, Ken, thank you so much for calling in. I appreciate it. I got another call on the line, and you know, running out of time, but I really appreciate your calls. Thank you very much. God bless. All right, moving along here, let's go ahead. I believe this is John in Tennessee. We'll go ahead and take him. Hey, John, come on.
It is, but you may not be able to hear me.
Oh, I can hear you.
Does that sound okay?
Yeah, you're loud and clear.
Okay, well, you're real weak, so if you can hear me, I'll take this, yes.
Well, I'm weak for a reason. I actually, there's a technical reason why I've turned down the sound that I'm sending you. But I won't get into that now. Go ahead with your thoughts, please.
Okay. Well, first of all, yes, we do have 535 between the House and the Senate. A scarier number is that, including the executive branch, we've got 666.
Oh, yeah.
In my book, it would be good if we just sent them all home and had less. We've already got too many because no one's doing anything anyway.
Well, they're doing plenty. What are you talking about? They're doing all kinds of stuff. Every day they work for the destruction of the country. So how can you say
that? Well, yeah. Can you imagine how much quicker they could get at it if we had 4,000?
Well, you know, I look at it this way, John. I don't think we should send them home. I think we build a giant... Well, I'm going to sound like Donald Trump now, but I say we build a giant wall.
I agree. Yeah.
Wall off, petition off Washington, D.C., call it a prison, and then be done with it.
Yeah, move them all over. That might work, and have televised executions. So I'll add fuel to the fire. They're all traitors. Yep. They all need to suffer the penalty for treason. So anyway, I was listening to Mike, and it prompted my call. Mike, I've listened to you a long time. I enjoy you. I think you're an honorable man, and you're very sincere. But I'll say it again. And I'll say it to any. You do not need to be voting for the president. You have no effect. You have no voice. They are going to put a man or woman or transgender or homosexual, whoever it is, they're going to put them in the office. You don't have a choice. So I told the man this earlier today, and he wound up agreeing with me. If you knew that a poker game at someone's kitchen table was rigged, or that the dice in the Alec Craft game were loaded, would you play the game? Listen, folks, it's loaded. It's rigged. So by you participating, you're giving your agreement, whether it's intentionally or tacit, you're giving your agreement to being used and abused and imprisoned and eventually executed, because you're saying that you want something, you want a lesser of two evils. Do you realize what that is? A lesser of two evils is still evil.
That's
regardless.
Right. Absolutely. Yep.
So, you know, I would tell you, come November, stay home. It doesn't make a difference. At least you know that you did not have your hands, listen, in the recipe of this mixture, of this toxic poison cake that this nation is building and making for you. Your hands were not in the kitchen. So when it's all said and done, you don't have to try and get the blood of the nation off your hands. You never had it on.
Yep, very well said, John.
I'll leave it at that and make room for someone else.
All right, listen, thank you,
Darren.
Yep, thank you. Appreciate the call there, man. All right, there's John in Tennessee, ladies and gentlemen. All right, moving along here, in the interest of time, we're running out of time on the show. So I'm going to go ahead and cover as much as we can. We have a number of different gun things happening. Mississippi governor has just signed a bill allowing guns in churches. And there's a lot of screaming and yelling about that. But, You know, when a governor does the right thing, I think he needs to be heralded about it for it. So those that live in Mississippi, you should contact your governor's office and thank him for doing the right thing. Because, well, don't churches already have the ability to have guns? That's the question. I don't know. But anyway, we see also this past week, I think it was just within the last day or two, 8 relatives were shot in the head in Ohio. 3 children survive. The killer is said to be on the loose. So we got a new developing high-profile gun story that's already being talked about again. They're saying that the authorities have interviewed more than 30 people in that case, and so far no arrests have been made. So in the meantime, there was a fitness instructor who was murdered at a church, interestingly enough. Why is all of a sudden our churches being targets for gunmen, ladies and gentlemen? But this fitness instructor, there were some surveillance cameras that were disabled on the outside of this church. And this apparently took place in, let's see, where was this at? Well, it's apparently somewhere in Texas, Midlothian. Midlothian police confirmed that cameras outside of the Creekside Church where fitness instructor Missy Beavers was killed weren't functioning the day of her death. What's interesting is even though the cameras on the outside weren't functioning, there was surveillance video on the inside of the church. Now here's a report from CBS DFW.
Tonight, a candlelight vigil for that Flower Mound the fitness trainer found murdered inside a Midlothian church. Tonight, dozens gathered at Missy Beaver's alma mater, which is Jacksboro High School, to remember that mother of three.
At the same time, friends who couldn't make it held a virtual vigil on Facebook, posting their candle pictures and memories. And for the first time, the church that was the scene of the crime opened its doors.
Gilma Avalos on the story tonight, live with those details for us. Gilma?
Doug and Kaylee, the pastor tonight told congregants that before they arrived, elders had prayed over each and every one of the rooms inside of the building. The Creekside Church may have unwillingly been turned into a crime scene on Monday, but tonight, worshipers took it back. Tonight, regulars and newcomers huddled together inside a house of worship tested by tragedy.
Tonight was an opportunity for us to just lean on one another.
A Monday morning, this person dressed in tactical gear walked these very church halls. Police say he or she broke into the church before Missy Beaver showed up to lead an early fitness class and killed her.
I couldn't stand it. I couldn't stand the fact that somebody hurt her.
Beavers had been Patsy Massey's personal trainer for 2 years. They worked out together, hit it off, and bonded. The two saw each other Thursday, said goodbye.
With a hug. And I told her we were going to work out this week.
Fitness helped Beavers touch so many lives. The general manager at Anytime Fitness, where she trained, called her dedicated, putting in long hours at the gym, except for recently.
She didn't talk as much. There were days where she wouldn't come in. It had been about a good 1 week to 2 weeks since I'd seen her.
But if anything was wrong, Massey says she didn't pick up on it.
She was extremely happy. She was extremely happy.
What she does know, based on this surveillance video, she doesn't think that what happened to her friend was random.
They were very casually walking around. They were just taking their time. No, I think it was pre-planned.
Okay, now one thing that's interesting is she mentioned she uses the pronoun they. They, as in there's more than one.
Right. Massey's firm on what should happen next.
I want them to catch this person, a man or woman, whichever, and I want them to pay the ultimate price. She did, so they need to.
While cameras inside did provide police with a glimpse of Beaver's killer, we're learning tonight that the cameras outside of the church were not working at the time. Authorities, though, are still reviewing security video from around the area for any clues that they may provide. Live in Midlothian tonight, Gilma Avalos, CBS 11 News.
You know, it makes me wonder if this isn't an inside job. Why weren't the cameras on the outside of the church working? But here's the thing, ladies and gentlemen. While they didn't directly say it in that piece The video, if you watch the video that they're showing, they mentioned in that piece that this person was walking around in a church in tactical gear. What it actually was SWAT gear. It had the word police on the back of the uniform. So I found that very interesting that this person was walking around the church in police SWAT gear. So whatever that means, I'll just leave that up to you to interpret. Anyway, moving along here. We have investors, Business Daily, asking the question, will President Obama regulate guns out of existence? I don't have time to share all this. There's a Missouri lawmaker who thought they'd pull a fast one, Representative Deb Lavender of Kirkwood. She's a Democrat, gun grabber. She inadvertently strengthened a concealed carry law Wednesday afternoon when she ran out of time. What she did is she put an amendment in the bill to allow for concealed carry, I guess, at the Capitol, with the intent of making a point with the amendment, and then she was going to withdraw it. Well, when the time got up for her to do that, she blathered on and talked and ran out of time, and then she ran out of time to actually withdraw the amendment. They hit the gavel, and that was it. So she screwed up and accidentally made, you know, the legislation that they were considering stronger. So anyway, a case of arrogant gun-grabbing scumbag. You know, screwing themselves up, basically. We see federal researchers, this is from nextgov.com, federal researchers build massive online database of genomic data. That's another thing. And then we have more tunnels along the U.S.-Mexican border being found. More tunnels in California. Border Patrol agent on a routine patrol found a 140-foot-long tunnel extending across the Mexican border to California. So that's going on as the migrant situation. Second tunnel in 3 weeks discovered under U.S.-Mexican border near Calexico, according to Fox News and KTLA 5. I'm hurrying because I want to get to, before we run out of time, the issue of the British exit of the European Commission. This is still a big deal. This is going to be a big deal until the vote in June. Britain continues to grapple with the question of whether to leave the EU. The June 23rd referendum is approaching, and there's a lot of heated debate. In fact, there is debate going on across, you know, all across Europe. Marine Le Pen, she's president of the French National Front. She recently, let's see, I'm looking for the clip here. She recently came out and called participation in the EU a straitjacket. Now, where have we heard that before, that term, straitjacket? Oh, yeah, Joan Vion. If she were alive today, she could call her office because her book was United Nations Global Straitjacket, ladies and gentlemen. So we have Marine Le Pen now using that same metaphor.
The English people have had enough of the European Union, and it seems the majority want to get rid of the straitjacket. They are nostalgic for their sovereignty. It means the possibility to deal with problems, the problems which they face on a national level, with their own aims, their own thoughts, and their own culture, whatever it concerns, immigration, economy, or any other question.
Okay, now Jean-Claude Juncker is president of the European Commission, and he recently came out and made some comments about the British leaving the EU. And because Obama's over there right now, and he's making a big grandstand over this. Anyway, Jean-Claude Juncker came out and talked about how, you know, his comments lead me to believe there's no way they're going to let this happen.
If I would say now that we have a plan B, This would indicate a kind of willingness of the Commission to envisage seriously that Britain could leave the European Union. We don't have a plan B, we have a plan A. Britain will stay in the European Union as a constructive and active member.
So, Obama traveled, as I said, to Britain to basically steal the spotlight from the Queen's birthday, and to use the visit as an exercise or an excuse to inject himself into their debate over whether or not the British people should vote themselves back, you know, to basically take back their national sovereignty or not from the European Commission. Now, Obama's, as I said, he's creating a huge backlash. It seems that some British people, you know, they don't like the U.S. meddling in their affairs. Imagine that, huh? The Telegraph in the U.K. published an opinion piece by Obama, and basically he's talking about, you know, I'm your friend, and as your friend, you should do this. Anyway, one of the MP leaders, one of the members of Parliament, Boris Johnson is his name, and he's in favor of the Brexit, the British exit from the European Commission. He referred to Obama as a hypocrite.
I'm very happy for anybody to say whatever they like about Brexit. I just think it paradoxical that the United States, which wouldn't dream of allowing the slightest infringement of its own sovereignty...
I have to take exception with that comment. Yeah, they're giving away their sovereignty every time they agree to a free trade. You know, we have all these multiple free trade agreements which undermine our sovereignty. But... his point is that the U.S. government still likes to be in charge.
Lecturing other countries about the need to enmesh themselves ever deeper in a federal superstate. And so that's the paradox which I'm drawing attention to.
Okay, now, Obama and David Cameron held a press conference together, and a reporter from the BBC confronted Obama. It's a rare moment when a reporter asks a very good question, which, everybody needs to pay attention to.
Thank you. Mr. President, you've made your views very plain on the fact that British voters should choose to stay in the EU. But in the interests of good friends always being honest, are you also saying that our decades-old special relationship that's been through so much would be fundamentally damaged and changed by our exit? If so, how? And are you also, do you have any sympathy with people who think this is none of your business?
Ooh! Whip him good! Anyway, she goes on to ask David Cameron a question. And he takes his stab at answering first before Obama responds to her question about, is it really any of your business?
And Prime Minister, to you, if I may, some of your colleagues believe it's utterly wrong that you have dragged our closest ally into the EU referendum campaign. What do you say to them? And is it appropriate for the Mayor of London, Boris Johnson, to have brought up President Obama's Kenyan ancestry in the context of this debate?
This is a British question. Let me go first. I mean, first of all, questions for Boris are questions for Boris. They're questions for Boris. They're not questions for me. I don't have some special power over the President of the United States. Barack feels strongly about this and has said what he said. And as I said, it's our decision as a sovereign people, the choice we make about Europe, but I think it's right to listen to and consider the advice of your friends.
The advice of your friends. So Obama goes on now and he attempts to answer her question, blathering on, and his response really demonstrates where we are in America as far as U.S.-British entanglement. Didn't we fight a revolution to stop this?
You know, I don't know if people are aware of this, but in the residence on the second floor, my office, my private office, is called the Treaty Room. Right outside the door of the Treaty Room, so that I see it every day, including on weekends when I'm going into that office to watch a basketball game. The primary image I see is a bust of Winston Churchill. It's there voluntarily because I can do anything on the second floor. I love Winston Churchill. Love the guy.
It's all about you, Obama.
Now, when I was elected as President of the United States, my predecessor had kept a Churchill bust in the Oval Office. There are only so many tables where you can put busts. Otherwise, it starts looking a little cluttered. And I thought it was appropriate, and I suspect that most people here in the United Kingdom might agree, that as the first African-American president, it might be appropriate to have a bust of Dr. Martin Luther King in my office. With respect to the special relationship, I have a staff member who will not be named, because it might embarrass her a little bit, who generally on foreign trips does not leave the hotel or the staff room because she's constantly doing work making this happen. She has had one request the entire time that I have been president, and that is, could she accompany me to Windsor on the off chance that she might get a peek at Her Majesty the Queen. And gracious as she is, Her Majesty actually had this person, along with a couple of others, lined up so that as we emerged from lunch, they could say hello. And this staff person, who is as tough as they come, almost fainted, and which was, I'm glad she didn't, because it would have caused an incident. That's the special relationship.
Can you believe this, ladies and gentlemen? We fought a revolution to get rid of the Brits. Now we have our president and his staff worshiping the Queen. This is where we come in America. We got to go. We're out of time. Pray for this republic. Do what you can to restore it. God bless each and every one of you. And tell the folks, tell other people about the show. We'll talk to you next week.